second I made it through. I bent and put my hands on my knees. My sides heaved. The air was so thick here, it made it hard to run. I glanced at Harris and saw he was grinning at me.
"I told you you'd be the last one to drag your sorry ass through that gate," he said.
I stared at him and realized he was right. He'd made sure I was the last man in line. If the lizard had chased us, I was sure I couldn't have outrun it. The raptor types were often clocked at better than 40 miles an hour. If anyone had died tonight, it would have been me. I suppressed an urge to shudder. Instead, I straightened up and gave him a tough guy nod. He laughed at me. Deciding to ignore him, I followed Adjunct Leeson and the bios back to their lab. It was time to dump dirt out of my pockets and theirs and find out if we'd wasted our time or not. The bio lab was interesting. It wasn't like any other bunker or tent in the camp. It was clearly designed to do serious science. There were machines there, things that didn't come from Earth. I'd been in here before when I'd been revived, but I hadn't been in any condition to pay attention to my surroundings then. "I didn't know we had stuff like this," I said.
"Most people don't,"
said the bio working the equipment. It was Ann Grant. Grant turned away from me to work on her equipment. She looked like she was in her mid-20s, but in Legion Varus that could have meant almost anything. She had brown eyes, brown hair, and for the first time I noticed her perfect posterior. I kept a quiet eye on that while she worked.
"Hey," I said. "I'm sorry about what happened back when we first landed. It was my first drop, my first real combat action. Maybe I could have done better as the point man."
She sighed.
"I wish you hadn't brought that up."
"Painful memory? I mean, of course it is. No one likes to die in the mouth of a dino."
"It's not that. You did fine given the circumstances. I was at fault. I was in command and you were a splat. I should have put a more experienced man on point."
"Well, I just wanted to say..."
"Forget about it, okay?"
"Right," I said, happy to do so. There was a brief, awkward silence.
"What's that one do?"
I asked, pointing out the main machine she was working with.
"It compares known genetic strands to anything you give it. We've got a lot of samples to run through this baby."
"Will it know about our alien friend?"
Grant shrugged.
"Possibly. This isn't a first-class scanner. The best ones are hooked up to the galactic databases cataloging everything known galaxy-wide."
"Why don't we have the best?"
She laughed.
"This is Legion Varus, and believe it or not, we get one of the biggest budgets from hegemony that any Legion gets for specialized equipment. But a forensics device like that just costs too much."
I asked if I could stick around while the machine ran the tests, and she said I could. We chatted for quite a while. I found that I liked her, and she seemed to have gotten over her rage at having died during the dino rush when we first landed. Having died myself recently, I now better understood how such an experience could leave one in a bad mood. When the tests were finished, she read the results carefully. She let out a sigh.
"The tests are inconclusive," she told me.
I tried to hide my disappointment.
"What does that mean? Are we out of options?"
"It means that the unit isn't sure. There is biotic material in the samples, lots of it."
"Including blood?"
"Yes. But most of that is from known sources. The few unknowns might be alien to this world, or they might be from a species this device can't identify. The point is, nothing definite showed up that we can say for sure should not be on this world."
"What's next?"
"I'll send the readings up to Corvus and on to Earth. That will take a while. But you know, there is one element we've identified with certainty."
I nodded encouragingly.
"Tell me."
"We found your blood, James."
I stared at her, uncertain how to take this news. She looked happy about finding my DNA in the jungle dirt.
"Actually," Grant said, "that's a good thing. It means you did find the right spot. There are samples we haven't identified yet. There's still hope." The problem is we don't have data on every species indigenous to this world. We're a combat unit, not a scientific exploration team.
I nodded, understanding.
Thanks, I said, and I turned to go.
Grant called me back.
Look, McGill, for what it's worth, I don't agree with Harrison, Leeson. It was a good mission, and it went well, and it needed to be done.
I gave her a smile, but I had to wonder if she'd be talking like this if a pack of lizards had eaten her for a second time. Next, I headed back to my squad's quarters where people weren't as happy with me. Kivi was the first one to declare this without any soft pedaling.
Hey,
she said, coming up to me and sitting on my bunk.
I hear you've been brown-nosing the brass.
I looked at her in surprise. I thought you knew me better than that. Kivi gave me a hard stare.
The gang has decided collectively that we don't like your special missions. We could have wiped out their hunting for your bug, or whatever it was you thought you saw. I'm here to ask you not to do anything like that again. Ever.
I felt an angry heat rising up in me. It usually took a while, but I could get pissed off eventually. If this kind of situation comes up again, I'll do the same damn thing. You can bet on that. She stood up beside my bunk and ripped open her shirt. The smart cloth struggled in her hands, trying to close again, but she held the two leaves open and flashed her chest at me. I couldn't help but stare. After a few seconds, she covered herself quickly. Kivi leaned close and whispered in my ear harshly,
"Then you can just forget about getting anything from me when the lights go off around here."
"All right," I said, "if that's how it has to be." She stormed away angrily. I realized we'd just broken up. I told myself I didn't care, but I did. During training, we'd hooked up occasionally when we both felt like it. Every time had been memorable. Now that was history. I flopped down on my bunk and stared at the one directly above me. I boiled inside, thinking of 100 rude things to say. A head popped over the side of the bunk above mine.
"You screwed that up pretty bad," Carlos observed in a whisper. "I could have kept that going, you know. You went straight up against her. Never do that with a woman, buddy. Especially with a woman who was that hot."
He turned his head, looking after Kivi, then looked back down at me.
"In fact, with your permission, I'm going to..."
"Shut up," I said. "She's never been interested in you."
"Okay, okay. I'll tell you what. I'm going to cry a special tear for you and Kivi tonight, big guy. One big tear."
I kicked the bottom of his bunk, and he retreated. "Asshole," I muttered. I tried to fall asleep, but it didn't come easily. When I finally did drift away, I dreamt of Kivi, saurians, and multi-legged aliens gripping me with all 6 of their freaky hands.
"Ha!"
shouted Veteran Harris the next day when the DNA test results were released to the unit.
"A big friggin' zero. That's what I suspected all along. At least no one died for your little fantasy, McGill."
He stomped away, shaking his head and mumbling. Pretty much everyone gave me the evil eye after that. Carlos looked like he was going to eat sitting next to someone else for a minute. Then he sighed and plopped himself down next to me.
"You're killing my mojo, McGill," he said. "I'm never going to get laid again if I keep hanging out with you."
"That's quite a sacrifice for friendship," I told him. "Thanks, man." He shook his head, and we ate quietly. After a few minutes, Natasha came and sat down with us. We both looked at her inquisitively.
"Don't stare," she said. "This is just me being friendly, not a marriage proposal or anything."
Carlos immediately began chatting her up. I could see this flattered and amused Natasha, so I didn't interrupt. I kept thinking about the alien I'd met, and about Kivi. Before we could finish lunch, the aliens made their next move. We jumped up, shoving food into our faces as the alarms went off. We rushed out and got our kits together. The bunker rang with the sound of 100 pairs of stomping boots.
"The bastards couldn't let us finish a meal," Carlos complained.
"Why do they keep coming when we beat them every time?" Natasha asked. You think they'll hit the walls again?
Ever seen a lizard in your backyard? Carlos asked in return. They never looked like geniuses to me.
Yeah, but they just keep dying.
I lost track of the conversation as we reached the surface. The heat of day made us slam our visors closed the second we exited the bunker. It was intolerable outside. Troops were scrambling for cover everywhere. It took me a second to realize they were being shot at, and at first I couldn't figure out where the fire was coming from. But then I looked up and over my shoulder. They had come at our fortress from behind this time. Somehow a few hundred snipers had scaled the mountain at our backs and crawled out on top of the cliffs. There were no juggers in the group, only Saurian regulars. They peppered our exposed positions from above. 2 dozen troops were nailed down to the ground before they could scramble to cover. I ran and took cover with Carlos at our section of the wall. More troops came out of the bunkers behind us, confused and looking around. By the time they realized what was happening, they were being cut down. They scrambled for cover too, but many didn't make it far. I watched them die, shot over and over again by the snipers. There was nothing I could do. I wanted to run out and drag them to my safe position, but the veterans were screaming for us to hold our positions on the covered wall.
"Let them die," Harris said, walking the line, bent at the waist. "There's nothing you could do for them. They'll be popping back out of the oven in less than an hour."
I wasn't sure how we were going to meet this new threat, but the counterattack plan was quickly deployed by my commanders. Earth's legions were nothing if not experienced and versatile. While we hunkered down and endured the crack and whine of fire from above, quartermasters ran down the line and issued us new equipment. Scopes and extended barrels for our snap rifles. It quickly became a game of cat and mouse. We nosed our way out for cover, eyeing the cliffs. Sometimes an enemy sniper sighted us before we did him. In that case, our man went down with a new hole in his skull. Almost as often, one of our light infantry spotted an enemy sniper lifting his scaly snout over the top of the cliff. When that happened, we painted the target with an infrared beam and everyone leaned out and blew the lizard away. It was difficult as the range and angle weren't the best. And it's always easier to have the high ground. But we took them all out in time. There were just too many of us. 1,000 light infantry gunners against 200 or so Saurians. They didn't really have a chance. After 20 minutes, they stopped sniping at us. They'd either withdrawn, or they were all dead.
"Did you get any hits?" Carlos asked me excitedly.
I nodded.
"One."
"Kill shot?"
"I think so."
"Lucky frigger. I shot 2, but they were both already sliding down the side of the mountain."
"Too bad."
When the all clear was sounded, we headed back toward our bunker. A familiar voice behind us called us back.
"Not you guys, not today," Harris said. "All my light infantry are to report to the mine entrance."
We did a collective U-turn and headed for the base of the cliffs. There, sealed portals were located. We found our units and lined up, rifles held to chests, visors shut. We were met by none other than Centurion Graves himself.
"All right," he said. "This is real, people. We've just had snipers appear on the roof coming out of those air shafts. We've got reports of more enemy intrusions in the lower regions of the mine itself. It's our belief they tunneled in from the far side of this mountain."
We looked at each other in alarm. I could read everyone's thoughts. Some workers' rebellion this was turning out to be.
"We're going in, squad by squad. Inside there are lots of twisty tunnels. Most of them lead downward. But there are shafts, too. Avoid those. They go straight down with sheer sides to the bottom. When I say bottom, I mean 2 or 3 miles deep."
"This already sounds like bullshit," Carlos told me.
"You better give the bio running the revival unit a tip. She's going to be earning it today."
I took a breath and hoped he was wrong.
"When you get into the tunnels, spread out into fire teams of 5. A weaponeer or a veteran will be leading every team. Our mission is to locate the enemy. Due to a high content of metals, the tunnels are immune to our sensors. If you make contact, withdraw, and report in person. Do not attempt to repel the enemy alone. Do I make myself clear?"
There was a general shout of, "Sir, yes, sir." Graves was walking along the line, eyeing each of us in turn. He stopped when he got to me.
"One last thing, recruits," he said. There are a lot of goodies down there. Uranium, gold, diamonds, every mineral worth stealing that you've ever heard of, and plenty that you haven't. But we aren't going to take anything. Do you know why?
He was looking straight into my eyes as he said this. I felt like he was asking me personally, but at the same time I was pretty sure he was talking to the entire unit. The fact that he was shouting every word reinforced this impression. I stared straight ahead, deciding to play dumb. After a few seconds, he walked away to stare down another recruit. Carlos chose this moment to pipe up with an answer to the Centurion's last question, which I was pretty sure was rhetorical.
"Because we aren't thieves, sir?"
Graves whirled around on him and marched back. Since Carlos had planted himself at my side, as he usually did, this made for an uncomfortable proximity between me and the officer. Just in case some form of discipline was required, Veteran Harris rushed close as well. He glared at Carlos from under bushy eyebrows.
"Would you care to elaborate, recruit?"
Graves asked.
"We shouldn't take anything. The Saurians hired us, and we're here to protect the mine, not steal from it."
I could tell Carlos was stressed. He just couldn't keep his mouth shut. The Centurion stared at him for a moment longer, then walked away slowly.
"That's a good answer, recruit," he said.
Carlos was visibly relieved.
"But it's wrong,"
the officer finished. He nodded to Veteran Harris.
"Veteran, could you explain it to them, please?"
"I'd be glad to, sir."
As the Centurion walked away, Veteran Harris walked the line like a tiger pacing in his cage, a pissed-off, hungry tiger.
"Let me clue you morons into some realities," he shouted. "The reason why none of you will steal so much as a hairpin of metal from this planet is right above us."
He pointed his finger up dramatically into the sky. We all glanced up, seeing nothing but hazy clouds. We quickly returned our eyes to the front and center.
"I'm talking about that big ship up there in the sky. The Corvos is a troop transport, people. It is licensed and contracted to do one thing, carry an Earth Legion. That's it, nothing else. If we're caught smuggling local goods off-world, especially the very materials the good fork-tongued residents of Cancri Nine sell to the Galactics, we'll be found in violation of every treaty Earth ever signed."
He paused for a moment while he let that sink in. I understood the problem immediately. Cancri Nine was called Steel World because it was extremely mineral-rich. That's what they provided to other worlds, minerals. If we took a sample, we would be violating not just local law, but galactic law.
"And do you lazy, thieving, good-for-nothing, sorry sacks of excrement know what the penalty for breaking any galactic law is?"
That was an easy one. We answered in unison as we had to our teachers in every grade since kindergarten.
"Death, sir!"
He nodded.
"That's right. If any of you are caught, you'll be executed. And you will not be revived, not even to hang you a few more times for fun. Do I make myself clear?"
"Yes, veteran."
"That's good."
He looked back to Centurion Graves, who nodded. We were quickly broken up into five teams and sent into the mines. For some reason, my team didn't get deployed until last. Veteran Harris was the only leader left standing with us, except for Centurion Graves himself. Carlos and I exchanged alarmed glances. We'd been rewarded with the gracious presence of Harris again? The truth, when we realized it fully, was worse than that. Centurion Graves suited up in combat armor and marched into the portal, with Harris trailing him. He looked over his shoulder at Carlos and me. His face instantly darkened.
"What are you two dogs waiting for? Get your butts over here and open the door for the Centurion."
We rushed forward, unable to believe our good fortune. We were to be personally led into the tunnels by Graves and Harris. It was the best of everything. Chapter 12. The interior was dark and forbidding. When they'd said this world was high in metals, they hadn't been kidding around. The upper crust was silicate matter, rocks and sand. But down here it was mostly metal and carbon mixed with rock. Graphite and melted iron was everywhere, fused into the walls in silvery gray lines. The portal itself was insanely thick and apparently solid steel. When the portal shut with a tremendous clang, at least a meter of metal stood between us and the hot surface of the world.
"You know what that is, McGill?" Carlos asked me. "The sound of doom."
"Shut up, Carlos," I said without looking at him.
"Keep in mind," Graves was saying, addressing everyone on the team, "we're now cut off from radio contact. Once you go underground anywhere on Steel World, there's very little radio range. The metals interfere too much."
There were about 10 of us circled together just inside the portal. Graves was the only one who didn't look nervous. We formed up, and I tried to get close to Natasha. I liked her company and was already planning pleasant things to say to her. Veteran Harris squashed my plans by waving me forward. I moved up the column and took a position on the right flank. He smiled and waved harder. I knew what he meant. I was taking point. It was a thing between the veteran and me. I realized that now. He liked putting me into danger. He wanted to see me die a few extra times. Not having any other way to deal with it, I decided to pretend I didn't care. So far, that hadn't been working.
"Pair them up," Centurion Graves said.
Harris ran his eyes over the rest of us. They came to rest on Carlos, and his smile turned into a grin.
"Let's see if you can keep quiet in enemy territory. Partner up with McGill."
Moments later, Carlos and I found ourselves ahead of our little patrol team. Since we were the last team to enter, I could see the flashing lights and hear the tapping feet of the other teams ahead. I started to relax. If there was going to be trouble, surely they would run into it before we did. My relief was short-lived.
"We're going to spread out," Centurion Graves announced to the team. "Each team is to cover a different level. In case you're wondering, we're covering the bottom level, the one labeled incomplete on your tappers."
We all checked our tappers, making sure they were in working order. When you had your suit on, the normal screen embedded just under the skin was naturally covered up, but Legion Varus had an easy workaround for that. The smart cloth immediately over the tapper relayed the glowing data onto the surface of the fabric. The system worked pretty well, but occasionally you had to peck at it 2 or 3 times to get a tap to register when your sleeve wasn't perfectly smooth. I crouched and brought up my mapping screen on my arm. I tapped at a little red down arrow until I was at a level of the map that displayed incomplete, and I frowned. There were tunnels down there, but nothing like the higher levels. They trailed off, and many of them had dashed lines. I turned back to Harris. "Veteran, what do the dashed lines mean?"
"Those are flooded zones, cave-ins," he shrugged. "Areas that are full of rubble. Incomplete means not finished yet." "How do we get down there?"
Carlos asked, looking this way and that down the long, echoing tunnels.
"Elevators are dead ahead, but we're not going that way. They shut them down because no one wanted to give the enemy an easy way to move around. We'll take the tubes. They're over there."
I followed his pointing finger with my eyes. I saw the mouth of the tubes, which resembled 2 black holes like eye sockets in a skull. They were cut into the wall of the tunnel we were in, and they appeared to go down into nothingness. We found junk everywhere as we moved forward. Broken tools and machines with power meters registering 0 lined the dusty walls. There was a small pile of helmets shaped like a saurian's head, and a few scattered bullets rolled around under our boots. I moved forward, my eyes behind my rifle. I aimed my rifle down the shaft and looked around using the night vision scope. I could see movement.
"Someone's down there," I reported.
"But they look friendly."
"Should be," Harris said in my ear. "Most of the teams are using the shafts to reach their assigned levels."
I looked back at Harris. "Do we rappel down, or—"
"Just jump in there. You'll float down."
I almost did it, but hesitated. Carlos frowned and glared back at Harris.
"You're trying to kill us right off, veteran?"
"Oh, sorry," Harris said, coming forward. "You're supposed to take this and put it under your feet first."
He reached over and grabbed a pair of disc-like things out of a barrel. He handed one to each of us.
"Careful not to flip over," he said, giving us a little grin.
Centurion Graves shouldered forward. He appeared to be annoyed with Harris and at us for causing a delay.
"Here, put them on like this," he said impatiently, demonstrating. "They're built for Saurians, but they'll hold a human if you balance right. You boys ever ride a skateboard?"
We shook our heads. He cursed in disgust and told us it was just like surfing or skiing. I didn't have the heart to tell him I hadn't done a lot of either in the hills of Georgia, and I could tell Carlos, who was from the Chicago Mega Habs, didn't know what to make of it either. As recruits, it was our job to obey rather than to complain, at least when our superiors were listening. We put the damned hubcap-looking things on our feet and stepped off into the shaft. At the last minute, Harris gave me a little shove.
"You're taking too long," he said.
I cursed and wobbled, but soon achieved balance and found myself falling at a moderate rate. Carlos came down after me.
"The water's fine, sirs," I called up to them. "Come on down."
"We will. Get down there and secure the LZ. We're going all the way to the bottom."
I heard them fooling with their gear up above us. The sounds of scraping metal and gritty, crunching noises faded as we fell farther and farther. We passed openings in the shaft as we dropped. Sometimes we saw lights and heard troops talking. Our men had spread out all over the mine.
"Why don't we exit the shaft and have a look below first?"
Carlos asked me.
"You heard the man," I told him. "All the way to the bottom."
We kept falling. At about the seventh or eighth level, I saw a bright, stabbing beam of light coming at us from the side shaft. We aimed our weapons in that direction, but I wasn't sure how we could defend ourselves while riding these hubcap things. I figured they'd probably tip over from the recoil if we fired, but we aimed them all the same.
"Hold on! Friendly!"
shouted a female voice. We drifted down, and the owner of the voice peeked out at us.
"Hi, Inga,"
Carlos said. I didn't recognize the girl, but she waved at us as we drifted down.
"Don't go down too far," she said. "I hear it's bad down there."
"Thanks for the tip,"
Carlos said unhappily. We kept dropping. Once we heard the chatter of snap rifle fire in the distance. Twice I could have sworn someone screamed or at least shouted in pain. There wasn't much we could do. We had our orders. Eventually, we crunched down onto a surface of rough grit. It wasn't quite sand. It was more like a mixture of ground-up granite and metal shavings. I struggled and ended up sitting on my ass while I tried to pry the dish off my foot. Carlos came over and flipped a tiny sliding switch on the rim of the hubcap. Instantly, it sprang off my foot.
"Magnets, I guess," he said.
I nodded and climbed to my feet. He waited for me and let me exit the shaft first. It was dark down here. Up on higher levels, there had always been light. Now there was nothing but a dim, bluish glow. The light seemed to come from strips on the roof of the tunnels. I supposed it was some lizard's idea of emergency lighting.
"Let's turn off our suit lights and go with night vision," I suggested.
"Let's sit in this shaft until the rest of the team gets down here,"
Carlos said, voicing a reasonable counter-proposal. I shook my head.
"Orders were to secure the LZ."
"Yeah, right. But they aren't going to know what we did or didn't do."
I frowned at him. Carlos was never going to be Legion Varus's poster boy.
"Fine, I'll take a look around by myself."
I nosed out of the shaft and aimed my rifle in a slow sweep while looking through the scope. I didn't see any movement, but I did see a lot of gravel and half-clogged tunnels.
"It looks like they've had some cave-ins or something."
"Naturally,"
Carlos said. He was right behind me, aiming his weapon the other way down the shaft. I glanced at him. I'd noticed that he never wanted to do anything adventurous, but if I did it first, he couldn't hang back. He had to come and look at whatever I was up to. I smiled to myself. Carlos hated to think he was being left out of anything. I guess there were worse traits in a soldier. The shaft opened into a tunnel that led to the right and left. We checked out the immediate vicinity, going no more than 20 paces in either direction. Carlos flipped on a pen light and it splashed on the walls.
After a few seconds, he knelt and fished something out of the rubble. It was a fist-sized lump of reddish, translucent material. It looked like melted glass.
"You know what this is?"
he asked me in a whisper.
"Junk?" "No. My HUD computer says it's pure ruby. About 1,000 carats worth. Would be even better if it was a red diamond. Those are the rarest kind, you know. A raw diamond this size is worth millions."
I aimed my snap rifle in his direction. I indicated he should toss the jewel down with the barrel of my weapon.
"What's your problem?" he asked me.
"I don't have a problem. You're the one looking at permadeath for violating galactic export laws." He made a face and tossed the jewel aside.
"You're no fun," he said.
We found nothing else of interest, so we flipped off our lights again and returned to the shaft. When we got there, we heard the rest of the team landing. The second we came around the corner, a half dozen rifles aimed into our faces. They had their lights on, and we didn't. They'd been making more noise than we were, and we'd come out of the dark quietly.
"Report, recruits,"
Harris demanded, lowering his weapon.
"Nothing much. The tunnel runs at least 100 meters in both directions. It appears to be damaged or unfinished. No contacts, nothing."
"All right," said the Centurion. "We'll move out to the north. According to the map, that area is smaller. If we can clear it in an hour, we'll mark it safe and go south."
"Excuse me, sir?"
Carlos asked.
"What exactly are we looking for, besides lizards, I mean?"
"You're looking for signs of a break-in. The miners reported seeing intruders in the middle levels of the mine. I personally find it unlikely they'd come in this far down, but we just don't know."
"A break-in, sir?"
"As in a tunnel that has been recently dug to merge with these."
"One last thing, sir,"
Carlos said.
"Have any of the other teams met up with the enemy yet?"
"Negative. There have been some reports of sightings, but they haven't panned out. People are shooting at phantoms up there."
I wasn't sure I believed him. Communications were far from perfect down here. Maybe some other group had run into something and been wiped out. But I decided not to argue about that. Instead, I lifted a hand. The Centurion nodded to me.
"Are we going to divide up into 2-man teams, sir?"
I asked, bringing up his initial plan. The Centurion directed his light out into the dark, forbidding tunnels. He shook his head.
"I don't think so. We'll stay tight. It will take longer, but since the enemy hasn't been found yet, and we're the last ones to get started, we're going to keep all our firepower together. Now, team, if you do see a definite enemy down here, you have my leave to fire. We're going in hot. There is no legit reason why any innocent lizard would be down here at this point."
I was relieved to hear this. I checked my magazine, made sure there were no jams, and flipped off the safety. Without asking, Carlos and I headed into the tunnel and swung left. We both knew we were going to be on point until Harris had his share of our blood on his hands. There was no sense in pretending otherwise. As we moved forward, I couldn't help but notice Harris had taken up his position at the rear of the team. I shook my head. I guess he figured that the dinos would have to eat all of us first to get to him. We left the group behind again, and I realized Carlos and I weren't talking anymore. This place was creepy, and we both felt a bad vibe about it. I think it was the quiet. Our boots were the loudest things down here. We crunched on grit and heard water dripping somewhere. Everything echoed. We reached an area that was crisscrossed with tunnels that ran with wet, dripping walls. We began moving from intersection to intersection, staying in cover as much as possible. Carlos and I were leapfrogging from one corner to the next, walking with knees bent on high alert. Puddles of water sent up wisps of steam when our boots splashed into them. Carlos signaled me, and I rushed forward across an open side tunnel. As I passed by, I took a glance down that dank, rubble-filled tunnel. There was something down there, something inhuman. It was crouched over a lump on the ground, and appeared to be digging at it. I made it to the far side and threw my back against the tunnel wall. I signaled Carlos, indicating enemy contact. He followed our orders, withdrawing to the rest of the team, who were about 30 meters behind us.
That left me alone with an alien rooting around in the tunnel next to me. Quiet fell after Carlos was gone. It was too quiet, I decided. The enemy should have been making some noise doing whatever it had been doing. I nosed around the corner to have another look. To my surprise, the alien was right there. It must have heard me as well, and had been stalking forward to investigate. I could see it clearly now, and knew it was a Saurian regular. They looked a lot like Juggers, but smaller, sleeker, and faster. What happened next surprised me. The Saurian lifted a round object. It had to be a weapon. Most of the enemies I'd dealt with on this campaign had relied on their teeth. A few had possessed advanced weapons, but most hadn't. I fired at him and missed. He ducked behind a spur of glittering rock. A flash of blue-white energy lit up the tunnel then. I saw the source clearly. He had a plasma grenade in his claws. All this happened in about half a second. I didn't bother to shoot at him again because there wasn't time. The grenade was already flying in my direction. I threw myself backward instead and around the corner from him. I landed on my back, rolled over onto my front, then began crawling away. The blue light built up behind me in a silent flare of energy. I kept crawling. Water splashed up and I could feel the heat of it through my gloves. I reached up and ripped away my night vision goggles. Then, the grenade went off. Light filled the chamber. It was a quiet explosion, like a flash bulb as bright as a blue star rising behind me. The glare of it seemed to burn right through the back of my skull. I was lifted up and tossed forward. I felt as if a giant had kicked me right in the ass. 1,000 slivers shot into my skin through the smart cloth suit, stinging and making me hiss in pain. I knew what that was. I'd learned about it in training. Plasma grenades were weird. Instead of being an explosive wrapped in metal which turned into fragmentation, they picked up whatever was around them and shot it out in every direction. In this case, I was feeling bits of grit and probably even slivers of water from the puddles I'd been scrambling through. They'd been turned into tiny weapons, some of which had punctured my thin suit. Half blinded and in agony, I rolled back over and tried to get to my feet. I knew that the Saurian would be backing up its grenade toss by rushing in close. I made it up into a sitting position before the thing was on me. Its claws scrabbled as it eagerly charged and rounded the corner to face me. It scrambled close, making a grunting sound. Behind it, my team had their lights on. They were coming, but not fast enough. I knew I was going to die again. I can't explain how horrible that feeling is. It was worse this time than it had been the last. The first time you face death, you can deny it. You can pretend it isn't really happening. But not the second time around. I knew all too well what being savaged by a half-mad Saurian felt like. Their teeth were curved and sharp and numbered in the hundreds. I managed to get off a burst of slivers, but that was only enough to get the rifle slammed out of my hands. The thing's muzzle was lunging forward, dipping down. The jaws opened. A rattling cascade of fire came to my ears. I saw the Saurian shiver and lurch to one side. It fell heavily and struggled to get up. But before it could, the rest of my team closed in, pumping rounds into it. The tunnels rang with the snap and whistle of our rifles as we shot it again and again. I slumped down on my back, in pain. Carlos's face loomed over me.
"You're alive?"
he asked as if surprised.
"You're ugly," I said.
They laughed and hauled me up. I found I couldn't stand. Sitting down was a problem, too. Centurion Graves came to me and squatted nearby. He coldly assessed my status.
"Can you walk?"
"Maybe in a minute, sir."
"Why are you lying on your side like that?"
"Because my butt is full of needles, sir."
That brought a chuckle from some of the others.
"Right. Plasma grenade. I bet it picked up this grit. Perfect terrain for that kind of weapon. You're a lucky man, McGill."
"People keep telling me that, sir."
I didn't add that I didn't feel lucky right now. It was probably obvious anyway.
"All right, McGill, we'll have to be hauled back to the surface. He's no good to us down here. Veteran Harris, get back up the shaft and alert the rest of the unit. Tell them we've had a confirmed contact and we have an injured man.
I want 3 more full squads down here in 10 minutes. Pull them from the upper levels.
Right, sir, Harris said.
Without missing a beat, he turned to Carlos.
You heard the Centurion. Get up that shaft.
Negative, veteran, barked Graves.
Sir?
You heard me. You personally are going to sound the alarm. I doubt these recruits even know how to operate the discs well enough to travel up the shafts again. Get moving.
I thought I heard Harris mutter something unpleasant, but I could have been mistaken. He turned and ran double time for the shafts. Carlos tried to help me up, and Graves grabbed my other arm and hauled with him. I was placed on my feet where I swayed slightly. I could stand, but walking wasn't in the cards, not yet. Just standing was painful. Then the chattering of gunfire came down the tunnel. We all turned and lifted our rifles. It was Harris. He was running back toward us, howling. Behind him thundered a jugger. The thing was racing down the tunnels after him, slapping its fat tail against the walls. Chunks of grit and shale showered the floor with every sweeping step it took.
Chapter 13. Harris was aiming his gun behind him and firing blindly as he ran. Orange sparks splattered the walls. I saw that most of his rounds were missing, but a few caused red spots to sprout up on the charging jugger's chest. Rather than stopping the monster, these injuries only served to piss it off. It ran faster, gaining on Harris.
Ready your weapons, but hold your fire,
Centurion Graves ordered calmly. We spread out and leveled our rifles. Harris was in the way, or we would have fired. I thought about doing it anyway, but Centurion Graves had given the order to hold, so I held. It was a close thing, but Harris didn't make it. The jugger caught up with him and snatched off his right arm, the one with the rifle in it. Along with the weapon, he lost most of his shoulder and the side of his face. It was the strangest thing I've ever seen. One minute, Harris was running for all he was worth, and the next, a big portion of his upper body was just gone. The jugger paused in its charge to toss back the morsel and gulp it down. What remained of Harris took one more weird half-step, then flopped down into the blood-soaked grit. I fired. All of us did. We didn't wait for Graves to give the order. He was firing, too, so I was sure he didn't mind. We tore the monster apart. It took about 10 seconds to bring it down. After about 10 more seconds of thrashing, it finally lay still. Graves walked forward and picked up Harris's weapon.
Grab his ammo. Split the load. He'll need it when he's back in action.
So calm, so nonchalant. How many deaths had this man witnessed firsthand? I couldn't even guess. He'd sounded more concerned about my injuries than he did Harris's death.
I made a mistake, he said. I didn't realize we were being stalked. Recruit, check out that lump in the tunnel down there.
He pointed, and I realized he was pointing at Natasha, not me. That made sense, as I was injured. It took Natasha by surprise. She was standing next to me, and she looked shocked. I don't think she'd ever been sent out to scout alone before.
What lump, sir?
She asked. Graves gestured impatiently.
Whatever McGill saw the Saurian messing with. It's down that tunnel. Recon and report.
Natasha was breathing hard. She had a wild look in her eye. She stared at Harris's mangled body. I could tell she didn't want to go down any of those tunnels for any reason. Graves understood the situation instantly. He walked up to Natasha and smoothly placed his rifle under the woman's chin. I had to admit, upon seeing that, I was unnerved. I instinctively took a firmer grip on my weapon. I felt a protective surge.
The penalty for directly disobeying orders is permadeath,
Graves told her.
But I'm a lenient man. If you like, I'll put you out right here, right now. You can revive later and apologize.
That won't be necessary, Centurion,
Natasha said. She turned and trotted down the tunnel into the dark. I watched her go, not knowing what to think. I eyed Graves sidelong. The look on his face reminded me of the first time I'd met him aboard the transport that carried me up to Corvus. He'd been in the emergency compartment, dispassionately watching all us suffocate.
That same steely-eyed gaze was on his face now. He really didn't care if Natasha lived or died. As if he was aware of my scrutiny, Graves turned to look at me.
You don't approve, recruit?
I didn't say anything, sir.
No, you didn't. Keep it that way. You're here to learn, and you've already learned a lot. Never forget what the Tribune told you, McGill. Legion Varus is playing for keeps on this planet. If you don't like it, you can get out in 5 more years.
Natasha reached the lump in the tunnel and examined it for about 3 seconds with her suit light. Then she raced back toward us as if her butt was on fire. I didn't blame her. Every shadow looked dangerous to us now.
It's another Saurian, sir, she reported. It appears to be a miner, and it looks as if it's half-eaten.
Graves nodded.
Dinos aren't averse to cannibalism,
he said as if he was describing some kind of strength.
There does appear to be a rebellion among the miners here, but it's much bigger than a few unpaid juggers. The enemy includes both large and small lizards, and one example of something else, if McGill is to be believed. Puzzling.
He gave me a cold glance. I got the feeling he didn't entirely believe my account of the alien I'd met in the forest. I shrugged. I didn't care what he believed, because I'd seen it with my own eyes. Hell, I'd shot it to death. Graves turned and signaled 2 fresh recruits to take point. I was relieved. Natasha came to my side and helped me walk. We proceeded as a tight group back up the tunnel. There were no more mishaps until we reached the shafts themselves. I stared in disbelief when we got there. The shafts were full of rubble.
Looks like a cave-in, Graves said.
He didn't even sound upset. The rest of us were horrified.
How are we going to get out, sir?
Carlos asked. Graves gave him a wintry smile.
We could just shoot ourselves. We'd be revived in a day or two based on our last backups whenever they figure it out. We wouldn't remember much, but maybe that's a good thing, huh?
Everyone looked at him in wide-eyed horror, unsure if his suggestion that we commit mass suicide was meant in earnest. Then he laughed.
Can't take a joke?
He asked.
Recruits never can. I would never order that, not now, anyway. We've got a mission to perform. These lizards aren't going to win so easily.
We weren't quite sure how we should feel. By staying alive, we were stuck down here. I could hardly walk. Harris was dead. And we had no idea how many more lizards were stalking us right now. What could have filled that shaft, sir? I asked. Graves shrugged.
A lizard, probably. Maybe one with another plasma grenade. They're pretty quiet when they go off. We might have missed the noise and the burst of light. We were far away and distracted. The more interesting question is why they blocked the shaft.
I thought about it. To keep us from warning the others, sir? I suggested. He looked at me and pointed a finger at my chest.
I agree, McGill. Your file said you were a college dropout, but I'm beginning to think there were extenuating circumstances.
I stiffened. I had no idea he'd been nosing in my files. My mother lost her job, and I lost my funding. Graves nodded.
That fits. Well, we've met up with 3 lizards down here, including the dead one, and there are bound to be more. Back to our original duty team, except this time we aren't going to recon these tunnels. The mission has changed. We're going into search-and-destroy mode from here on out.
We proceeded to carefully search the tunnels for the better part of an hour before we made any fresh contacts. I began to realize just how big this mine was. The planet was riddled with mines like this one, and the mineral deposits were amazing. There were clusters of garnets, diamonds, rubies, and hard metals everywhere. We called Cankri 9 Steel World, but it was much more than that. It was a treasure house of rare elements. The basic components of steel were more common than granite on Earth, but there were plenty of other valuable minerals as well. The difference between this place and Earth was the core mix of elements. This world had a lot more iron and less silicon. In practice, that meant it was more metal than it was dirt and rock. Instead of veins of ore embedded in stone, there were veins of stone embedded in walls of pure metal. Just about when we were all starting to think we'd met up with every Saurian that was in this place, big or small, they jumped us. They'd chosen their ground carefully. We came to an intersection that led in five directions, north, east, west, up, and down. None of these tunnels had a long run before they twisted or turned. Centurion Graves called a halt as we entered from the eastern tunnel.
I don't like it. They could be anywhere. We'll all take the tunnel downward together. That tunnel looks freshly drilled.
There were indeed shavings of steel littering the floor of the place, and the tunnel that led downward had sharp, flanged edges. I stared at these as we passed them. Centurion? I asked.
What is it, McGill?
I think someone just drilled this tunnel up from below. I don't see the boring machine, but it must be around somewhere.
Let's keep moving. We don't have time to sightsee or indulge our engineering curiosity.
But, sir, I called, running my gloved fingers over the blade-like edges of the tunnel mouth. He turned back in irritation.
What?
This tunnel that comes up and joins the primary run? Look at the drill marks. They must have been drilled from that tunnel into this one. He stared at me for a second, then Carlos came near and ran his fingers over the walls.
He's right, he said. They drilled from the outside inward.
Centurion Graves got it then. He examined the walls with squinting eyes.
I think you're right, recruit. Very observant. The striations are curved in the opposite direction. This tunnel is probably the route the enemy used to enter the complex. They bored their way in right here.
We heard footsteps and rasping sounds. Everyone unslung their weapons and aimed them in every direction. It wasn't immediately obvious from which way the threat was coming. But one thing was for sure. They were coming. I wasn't sure if they'd finally grown tired of waiting for us to choose a path, or if they'd just all reached their set positions. But I was sure it was a planned ambush, because they came at us from five different directions at once. It was chaos from the beginning. 10 of us could not possibly cover all five avenues of attack evenly. Centurion Graves roared for us to move forward into the low tunnel. We did so and found ourselves in a gloomy hole which was crudely cut and had no lighting installed. I was more convinced than ever that this was the way the enemy had entered the complex. Everywhere else in the mine there were lights installed, and often rails in the floor, which served for powered carts to carry minerals to the surface. This tunnel had none of those amenities. It looked like an animal's burrow, but one made of dull gray metals. By pulling us deeper into the low tunnel, Graves made sure there were only two directions we had to aim our guns. I had to admit, as the Saurians began their attack, I was glad Graves was in charge. He never panicked or froze up. He smoothly ordered us to respond to the situation and made the right move the first time.
Front rank, get low, he ordered. I want two men on their bellies in the front, two men firing over their heads, and the rest of you in the center. Wait until they break either line to commit yourselves.
There were only 9 of us, and the tunnel was only about 3 meters wide. I found myself on my belly facing back the way we'd come. The Saurians rushed us, and we were immediately surprised by what they had. Snap rifles. Fortunately, they weren't very good with them. It was immediately obvious they barely knew how to use their weapons. They sprayed ahead, sweeping the tunnel with clattering rounds. We gritted our teeth and returned fire. Our aim was dramatically better, and the first line of Saurians went down in a thrashing heap. Fresh troops bounded right over them, snatched up the dropped guns, and kept coming.
"They're using our own weapons at us!"
shouted Carlos behind me over the din of fire. Inside the tight confines of the metallic tunnel walls, the noise rebounded painfully from every direction. I saw that he was right. The snap rifles weren't just any weapons, they were our weapons. They even had the Legion Varus wolf's head stamped on the side. I realized they must have taken them from the other light troops. How long had this fight been going on? We certainly weren't their first victims. But were we the last survivors in this mine? Pushing aside such thoughts, I kept up a steady hail of fire. Natasha, who'd been standing behind me, fell. She was from the second rank, the standing rank. I guess I was lucky to be on my belly as I made a smaller target. I took a fraction of a second to glance back, and I knew instantly that I couldn't help her. She was dead, eyes staring, mouth open. There was blood on her cheek. I didn't bother to look back at her again. I could feel her weight draped over me as I fought on. It was horrible, but I didn't have time to care for her, or even to push her off my back. I just kept firing into that charging line of angry lizards. We sent a hail of steel in their direction, but it wasn't enough. They reached our line and overran us. The whole firefight so far had taken only 30 seconds, but lizards move fast. They were all over us.
"Gunners, hold your positions,"
Graves roared.
"Keep firing. Center people, repel the enemy. Knives out."
I heard clicking sounds and blood splashed over my faceplate. I had to wipe it away so I could see. I wasn't sure whose blood it was, enemy or human. The Saurian blood was about the same color as ours, just a little darker and thicker. In the dimly lit tunnel, I couldn't tell the difference. Trusting my struggling comrades, who were literally battling over my head, I kept putting bullets into the Saurians that were charging in. So many. I didn't see how many we could... Something clamped down on my leg. The back of my right calf was in the jaws of a Saurian. The teeth went right through the tough, smart fabric of my uniform. I hissed and howled, rolling over to face my attacker. I slashed up at it, opening up the leathery belly with my combat knife. The razor-sharp edge spilled lizard guts all over the floor. This made the Saurian release me, and it raised its head in pain, but wasn't finished yet. It made another attempt to bite me, the head darting down toward my other leg. I jerked away, and the jaws snapped shut on nothing. Carlos and I managed to nail it with a burst of shots each, and it fell as dead as a stone. The Saurian stopped coming after that. A few of them ran off into the dark. We chased them with bursts from our snap rifles. They slid in their own blood and screeched. The sound of their pain did my heart good. By this time, I'd had enough of lying on my stomach, so I got to my knees painfully and tried to stand. By the time I was on my feet, the next wave came. I dared to hope we'd seen the last of them, but there were more. The final wave was comprised of 6 juggers. They weren't the biggest I'd seen, but they were knocking their heads against the rough roof of the tunnel. All of them had red scales with bellies of silver-white, almost a pearly color. I might have thought the look of these beasts to be entrancing on a travel brochure, but not when they were hell-bent on eating me. Carlos and I glanced at one another. We were both covered in sweat and blood. Our sides were heaving from exhaustion and fear. This was too much. We couldn't bring them down with small arms. There was no way we were going to live. But I knelt and began to fire steadily into the lead monster. Carlos did the same. "Aim at the throat," I said, remembering the tactic from my past. I'd read about and simulated Legion engagements on Cancri 9 since I was a kid. Juggers were hard to kill with tiny bullets, but if you could do enough damage to the vital arteries... We peppered the face and neck of the leader with red sprouting wounds, but it seemed to catch on and ducked its head low, putting the crown of its thick skulled head into our stream of fire. There was no way we could penetrate into its brain with these weapons.
"Good try, recruits," Centurion Graves boomed. "It was an honor to serve."
I marveled at the evenness of his voice. He sounded like he wasn't even sweating.
"You too, sir,"
Carlos shouted. I looked up, bewildered, and Graves' eyes met mine.
"You're in charge," he said.
Then the Centurion did something unexpected.
"Cease fire," he shouted. "Put your heads down."
Then he sprinted forward, rushing directly into the charging mass of juggers. The leader didn't see him until he darted by. Confused, it faltered in its lumbering charge and turned. I watched with my mouth sagging open. What the hell was he doing? Did he think he could make it past them all and leave us behind as a sacrificial dinner? Then I saw the glaring blue light, and I knew what was happening. He'd pulled out a plasma grenade, and he was standing in the middle of the juggers. Fortunately, juggers were not geniuses. They whirled on him and lunged with snapping jaws. When the explosion went off, I doubt Graves had a limb left on him.
but he was past caring by that time. We followed his final orders and ducked low. The whole tunnel rippled with the force of the blast. Magnified by the closeness of the metal walls, the concussion reverberated painfully. That did it for the enemy. However many of them were left,